You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
We've been working to end violence since 1979. And we've been working and delivering legal advocacy since 1982. We learned very quickly that in providing support to women, we're navigating many areas of the justice system. So in thinking about the structure of domestic violence court, and as we're in this exploration process, as an equality-seeking women's organization, we're very interested in informing the structure from a woman-centered perspective and understanding that, as the previous speakers have all indicated, that we're talking about violence against women that's perpetrated by men, which is a recognition that it's this very serious social problem that's embedded in our society, and it's endemic in our society and an epidemic in our society. And so we're very interested in informing the structure, in recognizing that women are dealing with several areas of the law, and sometimes simultaneously, criminal, family, civil, the Indian Act, immigration, child welfare, residential tenancy, and they're also navigating the medical system, though it's not an area of law. It does inform the process. And so a domestic violence court, from our perspective, would need to recognize that there is more than one system that a woman is navigating, and the structure would need to recognize that there could be other areas of the system that are interfacing with her and her children, and are interfacing in a way that's not helpful, and at times that we've seen, a detriment to her. And for us, the piece that's critical in thinking about, the interfacing of women within the criminal justice system is, I think that it fits in with what you were talking about earlier about in terms of recantation. The reality of the process of staying, leaving, returning. That it is a reality and, quite frankly, a very serious frustration for systems and for advocates, and for it is probably the thing that's most frustrating for the system in terms of when they're interfacing with the woman, is the reality that women are, stay within a relationship where there's violence and abuse, leave a relationship and then return. And when we're looking at domestic violence courts and thinking about how we might structure them, there has to be a full-on recognition of this reality. This reality of staying, leaving, returning, and that women are entitled to safety and entitled to justice at each point in all of those points. And there's statistics to say that women stay, leave, return, seven times or, all of that. And that's very real. And we have to recognize that. And so at one point, I appreciate thinking about it in terms of recantation. I also like to think of it as the process of change and the reality. And that would be essential in any domestic violence court. And quite frankly, the reality in any part of our system has to be fully recognizing that and integrating the safety planning with that reality. And rather than trying to force a woman into a situation that is not going to be successful by ignoring this truth. So, we want to inform the structure, and we want to inform it from an equality-seeking perspective. We want to inform it from the perspective of that gender neutrality, just in the very term domestic violence court, is a problem. And that we are very much interested in the idea of calling the victim a woman and calling the perpetrator a man. Because we see that the court system is within our society and has a role in terms of social change. And the gender neutrality contributes to the lack of reality in terms of what we really see. The previous presenters are very clear about who the perpetrators are and who the offenders are, but the system is very scared of recognizing that, and really quite frankly unwilling. And we've seen a reduction in the kind of redressing of the language around violence against women in this province. And I've been in this game for 21 years, certainly, and that we're at a point right now where we're talking community-based this and victim that, and there's women and men are removed from this process. We certainly, in thinking about the structure of the domestic violence court, would want to have, and recognizing that the court has a role in terms of social change as well as justice, that the victim is a woman and the perpetrator is a man, and that the gender neutrality is a problem. So we have a very unique opportunity in Vancouver, if we're going to be, moving in this process, to do something different than we've seen in other regions. And, I remain hopeful that could be possible. And, you know, it is an important consideration for us as we go on. You know, misogyny is a reality in our society. There is a tremendous amount of hate of women in our society, and we're in the business of analyzing, you know, hatred of women. That's our specialization, is to look at it and to smell it, to taste it, and to confront it and to seek to, you know, redress it and change it. And, you know, the court system, the justice system is no different. Misogyny is very much a part of that in terms of, you know, and even the gender-neutral language gives us a little bit of that in terms of not recognizing that, that women are 52% of the population and 1 in 3 of us is dealing with violence and abuse. And I'm going to get more into, you know, details of what that looks like. But we certainly want there to be, in this structure, a full-on recognition of all of the social science and all the research that feminist, you know, researchers have done that show the roots of misogyny, that examine them. We want that research to be fully embedded in anything that we do in terms of domestic violence courts in Vancouver, and to be a model for that, quite frankly, in terms of that recognition. You know, we've been really sad to see in recent times to the extent to which, you know, in the process of power and control, the extent to which male perpetrators are using the court system, using the justice system in order to continue violence and abuse, you know, through power and control. So we would certainly want to see the domestic violence court in terms of the structure to recognize this reality, and to understand that this is a piece, that power and control is at the heart of what we're talking about when we're talking about violence against women, and that the court system plays, you know, sometimes inadvertently or intentionally plays a role in women's victimization by allowing perpetrators to use the system. And we're seeing that in all kinds of ways in terms of, how litigation, you know, is used by perpetrators, not necessarily in the criminal justice system, but in other areas of it, but it needs to be brought in, and we certainly want, you know, the domestic violence court discussion to include that reality. The other piece is that's really important for us right now in terms of using the system is this idea and the reality that we're seeing a large number of women being arrested for what, for domestic violence right now in British Columbia. And they're not. It is not, you know, it's a mistake, and, you know, in terms of the police and how they respond. It's not, you know, after. And we've had some very serious cases that, you know, at Brad Women's Support Services that we've advocated heavily for, and, you know, and filed police complaints. And we've had, in an unprecedented way, apologies from RCMP. Now, this comes all under the piece of dual arrest. And what we, you know, the dual arrest in some ways is, you know, shadowing, you know, what's behind that. And that's another piece of it, which is actually more than dual arrest, and that's women arrest. And again, it goes back to this piece about misogyny and a lack of understanding and gender neutrality and not really understanding the roots of violence against women. So, you know, we would certainly want any conversation, any, moving forward with domestic violence courts to understand that, you know, women are not, by and large, doing violence against their male partners. And that for the women that we've seen in British Columbia that have been charged with domestic violence, they have been disproportionately Aboriginal women and immigrant women, primarily immigrant women of color, who may or may not have English. And so we're also very much aware then, not only in terms of the misogyny within the system in British Columbia, but also racism, racist attitudes that are, you know, very much embedded. And, we like to call things as they are and move away from the language such as cultural sensitivity, but to talk about anti-racism and what that would look like in a system. You know, we're going big here because this is, for us, it's about social change, and we expect that our systems that are responsible for our social, addressing the social issues, and in this case the justice issues, would, tell the truth about what is, you know, what we see on the ground, what people see. And part of what our work has been for the last 31 years has been trying to get the system to tell the truth about what they see. So we're really encouraged to the extent to which we're seeing research that's telling the truth, but we need to continue that process in naming the victim as a woman, talking about misogyny, and creating a domestic violence court that's going to be real. And then there's pieces here about the defense lawyers and the role that they play. and we've seen for sure how they've interfaced or interacted with women, and we need to be aware of that. So the court system, in terms of the criminal justice, it's really only interested in the physical abuse, right? Physical sexual violence. And I see with the research that, that there is the verbal piece there, which I think is very interesting. The problem is the line. And when where we draw the line. Now, I can't see that we'd be rewriting the criminal code here, but I think one of the things that we have to, keep in mind is that, surrounding, the physical sexual violence surrounds things that are less tangible. And we have to recognize these things that are less tangible, and those are the tactics of power and control that are used within relationships. And, the one that we see right off the top is using isolation. So when we look at, the research about women not appreciating treatment necessarily, not thinking that it's helping, I think it's in large part due to this stuff. It's in large part due to the legacy and the impact of the tactics of power and control that are used in relationships, which unfortunately, a large part of the treatment, gets at the physical abuse, and it's there isn't the time necessarily, and because violence, and abuse in terms of male socialization is so, deeply rooted and very resistant to change, that we don't get at these tactics of power and control. Under no circumstances would we, as Battering Support Services, ever endorse treatment as a reward in terms of this system. Under no certain circumstances should there be any. There should be a sentence that includes probation, and there should be. If there's going to be treatment, that the treatment and the sentence do not. This treatment doesn't cancel the sentence. We would not want that under any circumstance. The treatment is a bonus in terms of the offender. The treatment is getting a lucky break in terms of having an opportunity to heal the pain of male socialization, and to heal. He has an opportunity here to examine the ways in which the society has told him a lie about how he should be a man. That is a reward that he gets, and that would really be important for us, in going forward. So our recommendations. We wrote these actually in 2006 when we wanted to do an exploration here in Vancouver. And nobody would talk to us then about that, but we're glad we're talking about it now. We want money to invest in the exploration of this. We want money. We want to look at the best practices that are there, and we want to inform them in terms of what we've just talked about, what I've just talked about, And I have to tell you that, I haven't said this outright, but throughout this process, under no circumstances will women's safety, not be present. In a women-centered model, her safety is paramount, and it's there front and center, and there's no question about it. So the reference group of key, stakeholders, which would include us, Battered Women Support Services, but there is a rich environment, community of equality-seeking women's organizations in this region that, we actually want women put back into this dialogue. We appreciate that there is community and police and all this stuff, but we want women put back into this dialogue. And we equality-seeking back into this dialogue. It has been removed, and it's been kind of co-opted, and it's been rendered invisible. But we want it highly visible in going forward in terms of that. This is ultimately about redressing, what is the worst social issue that we have in our society, and it is about oppression of women. So there's research about best practices, and we'd want to have a reference group, and we'd want to include, this analysis of equality, and without question. And all of the best practices, would need to recognize where we are in terms of Coast Salish territory, and to reach deep in terms of the indigenous ancient knowledge that's here and that's been here since time immemorial, and to have that be very much a part of this dialogue. We would not be questioning in terms of, where Aboriginal people fit in this, and that they would be front and center. And, you know, we'd want to go forward in terms of developing the strategy, which would be women at the center, seeking equality, and obviously women's safety. But to tell the truth about what we're talking about, call a victim a woman and call the perpetrator a man. That's it. Thank you.